copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
This morning's topic is art and contemplation. So before we go into talking and discussing, which will take the lion's share of our time together, I was in contact with both Reynis and David before this, and basically asked them if they could just offer, either individually or together, something on the topics that I was going to speak about. So I left it to them in terms of what they had to offer in terms of contemplation and what that would sound like, what that would mean to them. So let me encourage you in terms of how you might listen to this piece of music. Yesterday I spoke a little bit about musical imagination, which is to be sort of attuned to what's actually going on in your mind while you're listening to a piece of music. There are no words to this, so you're free this way. But knowing that Arvo Pärt is a believer, and just allow that to enrich your own contemplation, your own spiritual life. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much. So, how was your musical imagination engaged with this piece? Let's do it this way. Give me an adjective to describe what you experienced while you were listening to that. One word.
Tears.
Tears, peace.
Light.
Ah.
Rainbow.
Rainbow.
Rain.
Rain. Yeah.
Communion.
Communion.
Sharing.
Sharing, did you say?
Yes, sharing.
Yeah.
Spring.
Hmm?
The waves of the sea. Waves of the sea.
Waves of the sea.
Hmm?
Forest.
Infinity.
Infinity.
Rocking.
Rocking. Like a mother, the child.
Yeah. Can I share something?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yep, please.
All the natural movements that we share without the way we come from the earth, like all the Egyptian people and the Europeans and Africans are all doing the rocking, and the rhythm is just the natural rhythm of how you don't get tired, because this is the way of your natural muscles. If you pull something heavy, like a baby or a bike, like it's crazy that this is the rhythm that you don't need effort in your arm to do this for hours. Mm-hmm. If you have to do it slower, then you'll get really tired in 10 minutes. But in this, it's just the weight of your arms.
Mm. Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. So all of Arvo Pärt's music is not like this. It is contemplative, usually, with the goal of taking you to that place. This is what we call diatonic, which means it's relatively free of dissonance and tension. In order to facilitate, I think, this Spiegel im Spiegel, the mirror within a mirror, the gaze, the contemplative gaze, right? So, before we dive into contemplation, let's just talk about prayer for a moment. How do you pray? What's your experience in prayer? Is it what we call the laundry list usually? Like, God, help me with this. God, I'm praying for so-and-so for this. Or is it something else? What is the something else? Can you describe it?
A fight.
Yeah. Okay. What kind of... you mean like a struggle or...
Kind of fighting with myself and laziness.
Yeah. Oh, so is there guilt involved?
Probably. Sometimes.
Okay.
Waiting.
Waiting. For?
Different things, actually. Until I am still enough to listen.
Waiting until you're still enough to listen.
Yeah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know the verse, be still and know that I am God. I heard one translation of it is, cease striving and know that I am God. Cease striving. To let go. Right?
Contemplating nature.
Nature?
It's a form of prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Improvising at the piano.
Huh?
Or more broadly, not only the piano, but
improvising.
For me, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be movement for a dancer, right? Could be journaling, could be drawing, as we just drew the rainbow.
I want to say for me, it's a drawing and doing things together.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
For me, it's being present.
Present to to God. Okay?
For me, in German.
In German?
That I'm in German.
Also at the piano, improvising or playing the hymns from my youth.
From your youth. Hymns from your youth, yeah. Music that is important to us, yeah.
My works are my prayers.
Mm-hmm. How many of you as artists would agree with that? That my work is my prayer? Yeah? Yeah.
I think there are different prayers even during the day, because for me it's different just to be there and let everything go and meet with God.
Yeah.
And it's different when I'm painting and just worshiping Him or something is happening between us. So it's a more active part. I don't really say that, but to experience that kind of prayer is different from the other.
You said the words just worshiping God.
Just.
Worshiping God. So that's let's stay with that for just a moment. What does that mean to just worship God?
I think it's the most.
So it's the most?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But what does that mean? I mean, you know, we're not talking about singing a particular song or that, right? Like, it's something beyond that, right? And when we come to that point of worship, yeah?
Telling the truth to yourself, you know, about Him. That's part of worship.
Yeah.
Telling who He is, proclaiming who He is, you know?
Yeah.
I think our lives are a form of prayer. Depending on the attitude we use in our lives.
Right. And it comes in and out, right? Like sometimes we're very caught in our activity. But in order to pray, we need to either step outside of the activity or we need to have a different perspective on the activity. Right? Because we can just... you experience this too. Like you're just... you know, active and not in a prayerful sense. It's easy to do that, to be distracted, right? Especially with this, right? Yeah. So, Spiegel im Spiegel, right? The mirror within a mirror. It seems to be somewhat of a universal experience of prayer, of, you know, Christian mystics going back centuries, that it's this idea of the gaze, that I gaze upon God, but also that I'm aware that God is gazing at me, that I'm aware of God's presence, that God is looking at me and seeing me for who I truly am, being honest with God, but that the honesty comes as a result of being seen. Have you had this experience of, I think maybe my most profound experience in prayer, and I'd like you to think about this for yourself, was a moment that I was aware that I was fully known by God. Like I felt like I was being shot through my entire being, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, known to the furthest reaches of my being. But also simultaneously being loved and accepted, fully loved and accepted just as I am. Right? Yes? Yeah, right. So, I mean, this again, I was surprised when I first experienced this. It's not something that I experience on a regular basis, but that also to read, again, 2,000 years plus of history of people having the same experience of this. That God I mean, how can God know us so fully? Like, you know, we were just listening in the plenary about David and God, you know, working despite David, you know, and I feel like that all the time. Like, oh my gosh, you know, how can I be so fully known? You know, is who I really am. All the dirt. And yet, fully loved and accepted at the same time. This is the incredibly profound thing. So, I think that if you think about, and you can share or not, but I would like for you to think for just a moment about the moment or moments in prayer where you have, they're most meaningful to you in prayer. I just shared one of mine. So if anybody else would like to share something, it's a very intimate thing. So if I went into detail about this, I would weep. I always weep. But so I'm not going to do that. Yeah.
For me, I have some of those moments that God gives me a new song. You know, I thought I have this is from Him that I can sing back to Him.
A little bit louder, please.
I said I have sometimes those moments in my prayers where when God gives me a new song that I know it comes from Him.
An actual song. Like a melody.
Yes.
Yeah.
Song with words, and I sing it back to Him. You know, and I know it's from Him because I'm not trying. The song is just comes, and this is a song that I've never heard it. So,
Can you write it down? You could, if you had.
I did.
Yeah? Okay. Yes?
For me, I did it, I read the Bible, that is the time personal time with God, and I could read the same words, and sometimes it just, I knew God is speaking just straight in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah. David.
She was first,
okay. Madara.
There was once, I'm Lutheran, but there was one occasion when I was in a Catholic mass, and it was for a special small group of people, and there was a prayer of confession of sins, and in the moment that we were praying, and I understood that just because I'm from different denomination, I can't be part fully in the following ceremony, just because of the revelations. And in that very moment, I just felt a very deep touch of God, that even besides all of the revelations and these differences in the denominations that the priest won't let me accept Holy Communion, etc., God accepts me fully, and it was absolutely special something.
Wonderful. David?
Something similar, also from Catholic surroundings, and by also observing, not praying actively, or praying in my own way, but we were celebrating New Year's Eve, and we had a guest from Germany. So we took them to Benson Hill, this beautiful viewpoint in Prague, in the midst of a whole historical quarter. And on the way back from the hill, there were still many fireworks in the air, and you stomp on a broken stained glass and meet the drunken people. And suddenly we were passing a small chapel, which is attached to a small hospital in the middle of Malastrana. And I noticed there is a light inside. So I went in, opened the door, and there were several Catholic nuns. It's attached to the hospital. Let's make it biblical number, so maybe there were 12 or 7. I don't know. And they were just spending time passing from a year to another. A normal day, of course, a night. But in prayer, and occasionally one of them went in front and read some psalm or portion of scripture, and then they were praying. And it was so touching, so beautiful, so overwhelming. And I thought, what? Of course, the world doesn't care about our prayers. They just care about entertainment and, you know, and living happily and so on. And what if this prayer is just sustaining our world, if that it doesn't get totally crazy? So I felt so physically the importance of a background prayer of somebody who's just there to pray, nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful, yeah.
It was once in my life I had an issue that alive in my heart so strongly that I realized I have to cry it loudly to God somehow. And I remember it was a Christian camp at the time, and it was in the mountains. So I went to the top of one mountain and made myself sure that there is no one around me. And I started to cry as loud as I could to God, everything that was in my heart, until I felt peace in my heart. And actually God answered me.
That's beautiful. So, what facilitates these moments when these things happen? Let's be clear that it is God that does these things. We are not manufacturing this. You can't manufacture it. But can we create an atmosphere or a disposition in our own hearts and minds to open ourselves to this? It's a question. It's a question. But the active part of it has to do with what we would call contemplation. So I came in contact with this little book over the last year, a German philosopher named Josef Pieper. You may be familiar with him. I'll leave the book, you know, you're welcome to take a look at it. It's obviously very short and things, but it kind of rocked my world, this book. The title of it is Only the Lover Sings. The subtitle is Art and Contemplation. And, I'll read one thing which sort of relates to some things that we've just talked about. He says, the ultimate fulfillment, the absolute meaningful activity, the most perfect expression of being alive, the deepest satisfaction, and the fullest achievement of human existence must happen in an instant of beholding, namely in the contemplating awareness of the world's ultimate and intrinsic foundation. It's a lot there, right? He goes on and says, whenever in reflective and receptive contemplation we touch even remotely the core of all things, the hidden, ultimate reason of the living universe, the divine foundation of all that is, the purest form of all archetypes. Whenever and wherever we thus behold the very essence of reality, there is an activity that is meaningful, that in itself is meaningful. Right, there aren't many things that we can do that are meaningful in themselves. Most of what we do is a means towards another end. But now we're talking about the ultimate end, which of course we know to be God. But what is it that allows us or facilitates us having this kind of meaningful contact with the very essence of reality. Right? And it's interesting to me because I spend most of my time with works of genius. It's a great privilege. Most of my time sitting in a chair with a book in my lap. The vast majority of my time. It takes weeks and months to learn a score. You know, a Mahler symphony or something like this. But I have a lot of time to... This is an act of worship for me. I'm not worshiping Mahler, don't get me wrong. wrong idolatry there. But the you know, to be touched by the genius that is there and to have my heart and my mind lifted to the gifts that God gives liberally is an act of contemplation for me and all of us, you know, whether it's drawing a rainbow or whatever it is, these are very, very meaningful things, but they are means towards an ultimate end, which is this coming in contact with the essence of all of reality, which of course is God. Pieper talks about three different types of contemplation. The first one is religious contemplation. The second is philosophical contemplation. We're not talking about merely learning what different philosophers have to say and digesting their theories and ideas. We're talking about this leading to this ultimate ground of reality. And Pieper will make the point in his other writings that philosophical contemplation has a theological foundation. But then the third type of contemplation is artistic contemplation. And there are two sides of artistic contemplation. One is that of the creator and the other is that of the beholder. All right? So the creator, in order to create a work of art, must contemplate. In order to deeply touch that essence of reality. So... if you're in the Musée d'Orsay in Paris and you come upon a sculpture that, and you look into the face, maybe you've had this experience and you're aware that the face is actually looking at you rather than you looking at the face, that you are being watched, you are being seen. What's probably happened is that the sculptor has so contemplated that face, not just the surface of the face, not just the facade, and not just the person that was the model, but rather the archetype of humanity. And more than likely, the divine foundation in creation itself. Like this is what it takes in order to create a great work of art. And those of you who've studied art history and the different artists or composers and things, you know what these people had gone through, not merely to express themselves, but to express these foundational truths, but to reach to the essence of things. So that's the first level of artistic contemplation, is that of the creator artist. The other side of it, of course, is those of us who are beholding, those of us who are looking at the piece of art, who are listening to the piece of music, who are reading the poetry. We are allowed to then participate in what has been contemplated, and then this will facilitate our own contemplation of these essences of reality. I would suggest that in that space, because it may not be a specifically Christian work that we're contemplating, but within that space, when our thoughts are lifted or deepened into these essences, that the Holy Spirit inhabits that space. That's where the Spirit of God can come in contact with us. And we facilitate then, or participate in the work of God by quieting ourselves, by ceasing striving, and rather allowing ourselves to contemplate. Right? Let's talk about what happened to art in the 20th century. And let's think about contemplation from that angle. I spent a lot of time with works of art at the turn of the last century. I've conducted now all the symphonies of Mahler, but I also love, you know, Stravinsky and Shostakovich and these works as well. I don't think that we, from our vantage point at the beginning of the 21st century, I don't think that we can really assess the cataclysm that was the First World War and what that did to our Western civilization. Possibly the beginning of the end of Western civilization. Not that everything was fantastic and beautiful before then, but what the effect that that had on all aspects of our life together as a world, in philosophy, in literature, in artistic output, obviously in politics, the devastating last 100 years that we've had that continues into this day. And the works of art that necessarily came out of that experience and continue. I mean, you wouldn't expect works of art to be of great beauty coming out of that experience. When I listen to the music of the collapse of tonality at the time that paralleled the collapse of Western civilization, I, when I look at Mahler, who died in 1911, and his contemporaries, you know, whether it's the artists of Edvard Munch or Kokoschka, or these people were prophets. They saw what was coming. You know, there was electricity here in Europe. In the States, we're clueless as always. It's kind of a joke, not really. Kind of true. But in Europe, there was definitely an electricity shooting through the entire continent, particularly in the middle part of the continent, that was aware that something was coming, a cataclysm was coming, and these works of art that were foretelling this. Not pretty works of art, necessary works of art, but then there came this philosophy, this idea that art was about telling the truth. And I think it's true that art is about truth telling, but particularly now, at the end of the 20th century, into the 21st century, I do a lot of contemporary music. Not because I necessarily love it, but because I believe that what we have is a living art form, and it must go forward. Although I get tired with a lot of the contemporary music that I'm involved with. Because I see a lot of what I would call navel gazing, a lot of emphasis on self-expression and the way I see the world, and so as an artist, as a creator, so I see different levels of truth-telling going on. So there's a way of telling the truth is that's just the facts. There's an artistic representation of what's actually happening out there. And this is very valuable in the sense of making us aware of what's there. Maybe we're so caught up in our daily lives and what we're doing that we fail to see what's happening. And so maybe it's a political statement or a social statement or something. The work of art will bring that to light and help us to see that. It's a very valuable function. Then there's another level of art, which is the world as I see it as an artist. And it's my interpretation of how art is. Me as an artist creator, my take on reality. This one makes me more tired than the other kinds of art because a lot of times I feel like the artist, I really don't care what you think about the reality that's being presented here. Like, a lot of times what I'm seeing in contemporary art are people who actually haven't done their homework. They haven't done the study. They're not historically informed, even artistically informed, but yet they have a platform somehow to express their views of politics or whatever. Some of it is valuable, yeah, but some of it not so much. So then there's a third level of truth telling, and these are the works of art that I spend most of my time with, and I call this aspirational truth telling. It's not just simply the truth as it is, but the truth as we can envision it, the truth of who we are as human beings, and the possibilities that are there. So, you look at Beethoven's life, was not necessarily an easy life, very difficult, but his music was more about envisioning a society in which we go from darkness to light, we conquer, we build something better. Right? And these are the works of art that continue to inspire generation after generation after generation. I would suggest as a church that perhaps our best focus would be more on the aspirational side of things. Although, it's very important to also tell the difficult truths about ourselves and about our world. So, at this point in time, pivoting to us as Christians and Christian artists, we have a choice as to how we create art, how we embrace art, but also how we respond to art that is being created. I had an interesting experience. I was teaching a course at the New York School of the Bible for several years on Christianity and art, and various artists. It was for artists, and artists of all disciplines like we have here. And during this time, we had several controversial exhibits that were funded by the National Endowment for the Arts. And the NEA took a lot of heat because they were particularly conservative, particularly religiously conservative people were against the NEA because they felt like they were funding degenerative art. The fact is that the NEA was funding the gallery who chose, and the gallery was the one that chose to exhibit the artists. So, but that is what it is. That's all politics. But one of them was by an artist named Andres Serrano, and it was called Piss Christ. And the work of art was a jar of urine with a crucifix in it. So you can imagine, just that image, if you haven't seen it, you can very easily go on to the web and find a picture of it. take a look at it, you can say, you can be offended by it as a Christian. You know, how dare you take my Lord and put it in a jar of urine? It's not, you know, it's not beautiful in a traditional sense. But what should our response as Christians be to this? Should it be to condemn? There are several different responses we could have. One of which that we came up with within our class and discussion at the time was that really, as with any contemporary work of art, as a Christian, we should view it as a very real take or understanding of the world right now as it is. And this is the way people are thinking and feeling about our world, and what does that tell us about how we should be ministering to our world? What does that tell us about what people need? How should we respond to, not to the work of art so much, but to the need? But the other was actually provided by Sister Wendy. Do we know Sister Wendy? People know who she is? Did wonderful, a nun talking about works of art. And basically that this is what happened to Christ. You know, he was spat upon and beaten and pretty much urinated on, you know. So this is an opportunity for us to reflect on this. So we as Christians have the opportunity to create art that is aspirational, to help our world, to help ourselves, but also to help our world. But then we also have the opportunity to respond to art and other cultural activities in such a way that is valuable for us to learn how to minister better. How can we rediscover contemplation? How can we bring this into worship? There's the role of the artist. I suggested that perhaps it could be more about this aspirational aspect. We've got a lot of negative truth-telling going on in the art world now. I would suggest that perhaps that we, as artists who call ourselves Christians, can communicate the hope that we have in Christ and the better side of humanity, the possibilities that are there. Then there's the role of the receiver, the role of the congregation. That it would be very helpful if we would open our eyes and our ears to art as a way of worship, as a way of contemplating our world. I'll end with this: that as an orchestra conductor, right now. In our society where we are now, I'm struggling to find a way to articulate why it's important what I do. In a culture where the music that I perform, it seems to be increasingly irrelevant to the society in which I live. A society that's obsessed with entertainment and diversion, and not contemplation. You know, we do educational programs for kids, all, you know, with regularity. I do a lot of educating. Why do we do this? Why do we spend the money and the time and the effort on educational concerts? Why do people think it's even important that kids learn about classical music, as opposed to any other kind of music? if what we do is simply another entertainment form, you know, that's commodified, commercialized. If it's the same, it's just a matter of taste, then why are we putting effort into this? It's kind of an open-ended question at the moment. I'm going to write something about this, but I'm struggling to find it because I feel like when I ask people, even within my classical music world, why it's important, that when we start to respond, it's a lot of anecdotal things, like really kind of touchy-feely stuff about, you know, all of this, but not so much. Not very well communicated. My assistant conductor was observing him rehearsing some of our youngest students in our youth orchestra program. These are kids who are like 10, 12 years old, maybe even 8 years old, and so he had them playing Beethoven's Ode to Joy, you know, from the Ninth Symphony. And so he got them playing this melody together as a string orchestra, probably 30 kids. And then he just kept it going. And he stopped conducting them, and he was going around and adjusting their bows and helping them figure out how to play this. And I was sitting in the back next to a parent. And I said, "Do you see what's happening here? Nobody's leading these kids. They're listening to each other. They're creating something beautiful, and they're just listening. Don't you wish that every member of Congress had to play in a youth orchestra? Don't you wish that Donald Trump had to play in a youth orchestra so that we could learn to listen to one another?" Right? So you could apply this to painting, you could apply this to all other kinds of art. At this particular moment in our history, to be able to look deeply, to be able to read well, to be able to listen carefully to one another is an incredible skill. It's not about more information. You know, that's not what this moment's about. We need to connect with each other. We need to contemplate things that are higher than ourselves. This is the value of art and contemplation, in my opinion. Absolutely.